Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Keep your distance.
There you go. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. More calendars in. Well, actually one. It's called the Cheeky Calendar 2021. And it's the work of Flossie and the Beach Cleaners. Flossie Donnelly. And what they've done is they've got loads of sea swimmers from out around South County Dublin, and they have got the various things they've collected, as in the rubbish that they've picked up on beaches around that stretch of coastline, and they've used them to, you know, cover themselves. That's it. And that's why it's called the Cheeky Calendar. And all the models are sea swimmers. As I said, it's a lovely, it'll bring a smile to your face. And it's available there from Flossie and the Beach Cleaners. And I'll just read the introduction there. Flossie and the Beach Cleaners, registered marine or environmental charity. We are passionate about marine life and our planet. Our main focus is on saving our seas and sea creatures from the ravages of plastic pollution. Through regular fun, beach cleaning, junior school workshops on the beach and TY workshops, we aim to do what we can to make a real difference whilst educating our children in a fun, stress-free way. This is their future, and we believe that with positivity and focused action, our oceans and sea life can continue to flourish. In the words of Mary Robinson, hope energises, fear paralyses. And we hope you enjoy our Cheeky Calendar. All our models are sea swimmers and are also passionate about the sea. All articles and rubbish featured are from recent beach cleans. It gives you a small idea of what we find on a daily basis. That's a Flossie and the Beach Cleaners charity calendar. And if you want yours featured, send it in to us. The Ray Darcy Show, RTE Donnybrook, Dublin 4. And if you're emailing ray@rte.ie, Barbara was on overnight. Two things that came up on the show yesterday. Just turn up those headphones. My mother-in-law used to make super toast. We were talking about Nigella Lawson yesterday and her two-stage toast thing. So she toasted it, obviously. That's the first start, the first thing you need to do. Then buttered it, let it melt, and then buttered it again. And then she put salt on top. Anyway, Barbara says that her mother-in-law used to make super toast, batch loaf, she says, cut thick. Toast both sides under hot grill, then butter a lot of, then place under grill again. Yum. That's an interesting way of doing it. And we were talking about Christmas baking yesterday with Nevin Maguire, who's going to be on every Tuesday from now until Christmas. He says, my mum, or Barbara says, my mum used to cook a Christmas cake a year in advance. So we had a year-old cake every Christmas until one year, cake in oven, and someone, unnamed, in kitchen, when the light on switch came on the cooker, she kept turning it up so the cake burnt. My mum never caught on, so we didn't have to eat a year-old Christmas cake. That's Barbara. Your poor mum. And unnamed, please don't give out my name, so the name has been removed. This came into ray@rte.ie. I just wanted to email to thank you so much for making me smile in a very difficult time. I'm a nurse working during the pandemic. I work all night shifts. I have three children. During the first lockdown, it was very difficult. We did our best to avoid the children seeing the news headlines of the horrific images of mass burials in other countries and the rising numbers of COVID. However, they still were aware of what was occurring in the world. Each night, as I would leave for work, they would give me a hug and say, please don't get the COVID, Mammy. On returning home from work, they would ask, had I nursed a patient with COVID? I always answered no, because they were frightened of the virus. Fast forward to this month, November, I was off the night of the 8th, and we all sat on the sofa and enjoyed every moment of the den. As I left for work on Sunday the 15th of November, the three children were there watching the den, glued to it. And they didn't even get off the sofa to say goodbye to me. And more importantly, no mention of COVID. As I drove to work, I was thrilled that they were enjoying something that I enjoyed all those years ago. That's lovely. It makes it all worthwhile. Thank you so much for that, unnamed person. News just in, and we have to say congratulations to Wes and Rosanna. That's Rosanna Davison, because Rosanna has just given birth to twin baby boys, Hugo and Oscar. And she's tweeted out a picture, and as you would expect, it's picture perfect with the two adorable little twins, herself in the middle, and there's Wes, the adoring father. And it says, our beautiful and healthy identical twin baby boys, Hugo and Oscar, arrived safely into the world this morning, and our hearts are bursting with love. Just like that, We've become a family of five and all our dreams have come true. We're deeply grateful to the wonderful, hardworking team at the National Maternity Hospital for all of their kindness and support. Congratulations to Zanna and Wes. And they'll be needing a lot of Lego in years to come. Which brings us nicely on to this story, which is doing the rounds today. Lego have released their biggest construction ever. So it's the Colosseum from Rome. It has 9,036 pieces. And you can buy it for just under 500 euro. It'll be available from Friday, November 27th. And the previous biggest Lego construction was the Star Wars Millennium Falcon with over 7,500 pieces. So this one, 9,036. And I'm just looking at it here and they're all the same colour as you would expect from the Colosseum. Well, most of them are the same colour, so that's going to be a difficult one to do. And the price, exact price, €491.86. How long would it take you to build that? How long would it take you to build something with 9,036 pieces in Lego? I don't know. I've never attempted something that big. Well, obviously I haven't because that hasn't been available. They're telling us now on the BBC website how to improve your working life if you're working from home. And I see now that's becoming a real issue as we go into next year and more people, you know, people who were expecting to be back in the office won't be back in the office. So most of the things are straightforward. As much light as you can, let the light in. Declutter your workspace. Stand up if you can, that's easy. Use plants. I hadn't heard that one before. Many claims are made for the mental benefits of contact with the natural world, reducing blood pressure, anxiety, stress and rumination, endlessly going over the same thoughts while improving attention, memory and sleep. Bringing plants and other natural objects and images into your home workspace can have a significant impact, they're saying. So all of those things, easy enough. Let the light in, declutter, stand up, use plants. The last one is probably the most crucial and it's the most difficult to achieve. Social contact. Isn't that the thing that everyone's given out about from working from home? They miss the water cooler moments. They miss the chats with their workmates. And, you know, for a lot of people, their friends are their workmates. So by working from home, they're missing all of that social contact. How do you get it? I don't know. It's those liaisons and rendezvous in the local park, going out for a walk, socially distanced walk. You have to work that in. Work that in. And better still if it involves a bit of fresh air and exercise. Anyway, that's advice there from the BBC. I was reading an interview with Jilly Cooper. She's 83 and she's still penning racy romances that her readers adore. And she's interviewed by Mary McCarthy in the Irish Independent. And the quote which makes the headline is, "Irish men ride like angels." I think she's referring to their horsey abilities and talents. We were talking to, or it could be something else, we were talking to Gabriel Byrne the other day and somebody texted in to say, tell Gabriel he's still a Marquiacht. He's still a Marquiacht. So Jilly Cooper there, she's always good fun, isn't she? Or maybe she's saying the same all around the world, you know. So there's a headline in Canada going, Canadian men ride like angels. Although she does have contacts. She has direct contacts. Her adopted daughter, Emily, is Irish. And she had a greyhound called Feather. And he was a rescue greyhound from County Offaly. So she has a connection with Ireland. So maybe I'm not being fair to her. 5155 on radio.rt.ie. Congratulations to Rosanna and Wes on such happy news as that person. And you mentioned yesterday that you found it strange for people to have their dinner during the day. But most country people have their dinner at one. And we still do, even though we're not farmers. But my husband works near home and gets home for dinner at 1 to 2. No, it wasn't that. We had somebody on the quiz. Was it Mary? I think it was Mary was her name. And Mary had just finished her dinner at that stage. So they had their dinner at sort of 3:30, 4 o'clock. Like back in the day, we would have had our dinner in the middle of the day at lunchtime, if you know what I mean. And now we have our dinner in the evening and we have lunch at lunchtime. But it wasn't, somebody described, you know, how do you describe the plain people of Ireland? They're the people who have their dinner in the middle of the day. Yeah, I think most people have it later on now, do they? But 3:30, 4 just struck me as being odd, and it struck Nevin Maguire as being odd. But you know, whatever, whatever works for you, whatever works for you. And speaking of our quiz of today, yes, today the 18th of November, and we're looking for two people to answer questions on events that have happened on this day over the years, TV programs, movies, songs. Big news stories, scientific breakthroughs, births and deaths. They're all in there. So five questions each for two people. Lovely prize this week. It's a two-night stay at Ballinahinch Castle Hotel in Connemara, surrounded by 700 acres of pristine wooded grounds and one of Connemara's oldest landscape gardens. Enjoy a two-night stay in a beautiful river view room with breakfast and afternoon tea for two in the handsome Owen Moore restaurant with floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking the river. And while you're there, take advantage of the activities on site with a choice of fly fishing, a guided boat trip of Roundstone Bay, clay pigeon shooting, or guided walks of the estate. All the details on BallinahinchCastle.com. So, to take part, you have to answer our qualifying question, which is this. Which county in Ireland is known as the Model County? Which county in Ireland is known as the Model County? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. And good luck with that. Thank you. Thank you. In regards to the Lego Colosseum construction time, as with everything else in Rome, it won't be built in a day. Hey! Yes. Thank you very much for that. That was great. Didn't even put a name to it. We'd love to credit you with that. Ruth has been on. Would love to give our Cove Tidy Towns calendar a shout. It's our 11th calendar. As volunteers who work all year round to keep our town and beaches clean and beautiful, we produce this calendar each year to fundraise towards our work. We have had the usual ways of selling them due to COVID restrictions. So you can buy them via our Facebook page or Twitter, €10 each. We love the photos all submitted by people living in or visiting lovely Cove. Now, don't start sending us in texts and emails about your calendars. I want to see them. I want to hold them. I want to be able to flick through them. That's the way it goes. And I think we're building towards a charity calendar of the year award ceremony. It's going to be virtual. There's going to be a lot going on there. So we'll have people on Zoom from all over the country. We'll have different categories, like best pictures would be a good one. Cutest would be another one. All that sort of thing. What? Says Niamh. Says Niamh, I have enough to do now without organising a charity calendar of the year award ceremony. My mother always said, dinner or no dinner, we dine at one. Wise words. Are they wise words? 5 and 5 on RaidRT.ie. Good afternoon. Prince and Kiss. Mary's been back on. She's not impressed. Not at all. She says, not impressed with you calling her dinner time odd. Kids are just in from school and starving. What do you expect? Says Mary with her tongue in her cheek, I think. Children usually ravenous when they come from school, hence dinner at four, says somebody else. Dinner at one and supper at six. When we went to Crow Park for All Ireland Sunday, we had breakfast and dinner about 7 in the morning before we hit off. Saved time stopping for dinner and got to our seats on time. Wasn't that a dumb believables one? So we had dinner at 8 o'clock in the morning to have a clear run of the day. Can you please say happy 50th wedding anniversary to my mum and dad, Paddy and Olivia Tierney, in Roscrea in County Tipperary, from all four children and all seven grandchildren. Needless to say, no celebration this year, but we will look forward to celebrating when we can get together again. That's from Tricia in Massachusetts. So happy anniversary, Paddy and Olivia. And they're down in Roscrea. We're staying in Tipperary because we got an email in from Catherine. And she's the chairperson of the Down Syndrome Tipperary branch. How are you doing, Catherine?
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Good to talk to you. So this is sort of a DIY SOS in that you don't have Baz Eshmawe, but you're looking for some help.
We're better than Baz down in Tip now at this stage, Ray, I think. We purchased a house there, and it's for children and adults with Down syndrome who are living right across the whole county. And it's a 3-bedroom house, and out the back there's lovely workshops and a fine garden space. But when it came to getting fundraising and all of that together and trying to get grants and trying to get money together to kind of do it up and renovate it, we were kind of short, and so we kind of looked to do a DIY project instead with help from people in the community. And so far we've been blown away by the support. It's just been unbelievable. But like I was saying in the email, we're starting to get a bit short on plasters and black layers, so I was hoping for a call out.
Yes, we'll do that in a moment, plasters and block layers. But tell us a little bit about the centre and what services you'll be providing there?
So we have a full-time speech and language therapist who's been with us there for 11 years, and there's such a demand for speech therapy because it's a big issue with people with Down syndrome is their communication, and it is so important. So as well as Susanna Stokes, our speech therapist there, we also have a part-time speech therapist, Charlotte O'Leary, and another educational tutor employed as well. And we pay for all that through fundraising because we try to subsidise the fees for parents because everybody's under pressure, and this isn't anything linked to the HSE. It's our own branch, so you know we're trying to do our best for everyone. But aside from those therapies, we also have an occupational therapy sessions that are before COVID would have been run on Saturdays, and they kind of link in with physio and occupational therapy. And then we have dance classes and exercise classes, and we did cookery up until before COVID as well. Okay. So at the minute, our speech therapists are kind of zooming out of the house and trying to do cookery through Zoom, which is a bit of a challenge. But so it's a really active place. And I suppose now we feel when this project will be finished, we'll be all kind of under one roof, because before we had to rent properties across the county in different locations, and we were spending a lot of money on rent and things like that. So we won't have that fee anymore.
So that's brilliant. So you'll have a home.
We will have a home, finally.
You're transforming it completely. So rooms that were bedrooms are now...
They're therapy rooms.
Okay.
So in the front house, we have now three therapy rooms and an office space. And the office space in the house that we built, it was quite damp and all of that. So that all had to be literally knocked to the ground and rebuilt. And we have that much of the project actually completed, which is just fantastic because it's no length since we started this project.
Yeah.
And then out in the back, the workshops were previously used by a company called CM Signs there in Thurles. And they would do signage for vehicles and things like that. So it wouldn't be warm enough for children to go in or for our babies to do their yoga classes or anything like that. So all of that has to be rewired and a heating system has to go in, windows have to go in, it had to be re-roofed. So there's a lot of work to be done there. But we have high hopes that we'll get it done. And
everybody is rocking up and volunteering and giving their services free of charge, which is brilliant.
It's been unbelievable. Like there's a local butcher there in town, and he drove by one day, he'd known an awful lot of us, and he said he'd call in and see what was going on, and he just couldn't believe it. He saw people working away, you know, doing different parts in different places, and he drove down to the butcher and himself and another guy there in the shop beside him. It's Cahill Eli and Dennis Riley. A lot of people would know their space in Thurles, and they decided to come up and feed the volunteers and, you know, donate dinners and it's just all of that kind of stuff is going on. And like, I can't keep mentioning names because the list is endless.
No, but a great sense of community going on there in Thurles. And what's your connection with my own daughter Katie,
she's just turned 9 last week. She has Down syndrome.
Right.
She's in second class there in Luke National School, and we would have joined the branch initially when she was maybe 3 months old.
Right.
So we would have done just fundraising and different activities and things over the last 9 years.
And can I ask you, Catherine, why are the services that you're providing not provided by the state?
I know, Ray, that's the question that we are continuously asking. And even when we were looking for grants and looking for money, you know, we just kept, you know, I don't know, is it that our group isn't big enough to make enough noise or what the issue is? But like in my own circumstance, my own daughter, Katie, when she was 2, we knew she had hearing problems and speech problems, and she was 18 months without any speech therapy services due to like a moratorium at the time in the HSE, where a girl left the service as a speech therapist and her position wasn't replaced.
I know this is quite serious, but it's as if the state, the government know that people like you and the community in Thurles are going to get them off the hook because they'll get up and do it themselves.
We're filling a gap, and we're filling that gap all the time.
All the time, and yes.
And the trouble with it is, and I suppose the way we look at it is, like, we can tackle the HSE and we can fight the corner for our kids, which we do from the minute they're born. And I know anybody with a child with special needs will feel the same way and they'll recognise what I'm saying. But while we're doing that, our children are actually getting older and the space for that early intervention is just gone.
Yeah.
And so we had to, you know, and I know it's the same for all the families. There's over 70 families linked into this building in Tipperary. And they will all say the same thing. If we sit back and try and wait and try and fight this, the time goes.
It's a waste of energy.
It's a waste of energy.
Channel your energy into something like this.
Yeah, and when we work together, like there's parents now linking in and they're coming on board with this from all of their own walks of life. Like I'm teaching, I'm in the school, and we have another guy who puts in windows and all of that for a living, and he's come on board. And like, I mean, he has enough going on in his own life the same way the rest of us do. but it's that community spirit again, with everybody just trying their best to get involved and just trying to work it out so that everybody, like our children in particular, so that they have a better way of life, you know. And it's great for the community to see it, because you know yourself, years ago people with Down syndrome weren't seen anywhere
at all,
at all, you know, where now we're kind of changing it, and our kids are breaking those boundaries every day with different things they're doing. I know my own daughter, like, she's a massive fan of basketball and she plays basketball with the Berlin Special Olympics Club, and you know they're all out doing everything they can as much as they can, and that's the way we want to keep it.
Yes,
you know,
so
this centre will help us to do that as well now.
I recall that Baz was on to us looking for plasters as well. I think they're the, of all the trades, they're the most in demand. Okay,
impossible. Yeah, it's impossible.
So you need plasters and bricklayers.
We do, yeah, both of those, yeah, that's what we're doing. And we, as well, this week, I actually forgot to mention it in the email, but sure, I know when I'm on now, I might as well say it. We started a try to do a, like a Jingle Your Jumper campaign as well with the National Christmas Jumper Day, which is the 11th of December. We sent it out to the primary schools. So I know my own school here, I just have to say hi to them all in Corville here in Roscrea, because I told them I would. But they're all going to get jingling their jumpers on the 11th of December, and we had a really good response to that. So that'll kind of help with it.
Great. Now, gone. Lost Catherine there, but I think we've got it all there. The jingly jumper thing is happening in December, and she's looking for, they're looking for plasters and bricklayers or blocklayers in the Thurles area to help them out, and they just want to complete that renovated house so it becomes their home and their centre for Down Syndrome Tipperary branch. So if you contact us, we'll pass on Catherine's details. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551 or Ray at RTE.ie. Now, Helena Joyce joins me in studio. How are you doing, Helena?
Hi, how are you, Ray?
Helena is on page 128 in one of the editions of A Page in My Life. We'll talk about that later on. And Helena's contribution to A Page in My Life was one of those ones that begs questions, because she describes a situation in her life and you really want to know why she's feeling this way and what happens next. So what we did, we got Helena in last week, we got her on the phone and we asked her to record her contribution, which she did, which we're going to play now, and then we'll chat to Helena after that. So here you are, Helena, you can listen to yourself.
My Brave Face by Helena Joyce, 9th of December 2017. Saturday morning. I'm so tired. Not much sleep again. How much sleep does a person actually need to keep going, I wonder. I wish now I hadn't promised the lads a home-cooked dinner this evening. Who knew that teenage boys could get tired of eating takeaways? List in hand, I entered the supermarket. Good, not too busy. Right, I think, stick to the plan, get enough fresh meat for a few dinners, avoid making eye contact, and get to the checkout without incident. Sounds straightforward. Usually is. Nothing is now, though, and never will be again. Okay, focus. Sausages, rashers. Oh, must remember the waffles. That'll get them through lunch. Chicken fillets, mince, pork fillet. Fine for a few days then. I wish I'd taken more notice of what there actually was in the cupboards. A cursory glance was all I'd managed before I left. I wonder who bought all those tins. Gosh, this fridge aisle is chilly. I need milk, cheese, ham. I need to move on to somewhere a bit warmer. Definitely need a few treats. Crisps, biscuits, chocolate. And then, there it is. The 12-pack of Cadbury's Purple Snacks in that unmissable packaging. They were Colm's favourite and never on the list, as they are essential items. And then I began to feel sick. I leaned on the trolley for support. If I let go now, I'll fall. I mustn't let go. Hold tight. Deep breaths, tiny steps. Finally, the freezer aisle. Quickly, I grabbed chips, pizzas. Oh, the waffles, good. Now, just a few more steps to the checkout, but my legs won't move. I'm frozen, nearly literally. I could be, I decide, if I get into the open freezer. Surely by the time someone notices me, I will actually have frozen and be numbed forever. I'm tempted. I hear myself gasp out loud and I realise I've been holding my breath. Stop, get a grip. I look around me. No one has heard me. I mustn't have said that out loud. Just breathe, I command myself. It's simple. You've been doing it all your life. It can't end here. The freezer aisle in Tesco of all places. The ignominy. I suddenly remember that Mary's probably already sitting in the cafe waiting for me. I'd hate for her to be here when they take my frozen remains out. It'd be a terrible surprise too for some unlucky customer just expecting to pick up their frozen turkey for Christmas while stocks last. I chuckle inwardly and I'm back in the moment. I take a deep breath and move more purposefully now towards the checkout. Small queue, thankfully. Gosh, I'm cold. I really need that coffee, and I'll need something sugary with it too. Oh, hi, Mary. I'll be finished in a minute. Yeah, I'm fine. Yes, an Americano would be great, thanks. My brave face, the first of many.
Hey. How did that feel, listening back?
It feels a bit strange, I suppose. It probably needs to be put into context because
yes.
It sounds a little bit out there on its own.
Yeah, so my brave face, when I read it first, I thought that you just got a diagnosis. That's what I thought.
Well, I suppose in a way it was a bit of a diagnosis. It was a diagnosis for a new life that I hadn't banked on happening to me, and which I didn't really want to undertake, but was being forced to start all over again, basically.
So that was your first day shopping after your husband died?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd had about a week and a half at that stage of when Colm had a cardiac arrest in our house, through the whole hospital procedure, family around, two of them had stayed with me for a full week, then the funeral, and then a couple of days after the funeral, everybody went back to their own lives. And the lads, of course, asked, what's for dinner? And I said, oh, we'll get a takeaway. And then they just said, really would like a home-cooked meal. We're fed up with takeaways. So I said I would go to the shop the next day. And my friend had said she'd meet me at the end of it, which was great.
Yeah.
And that was what happened. That was how I felt as I went around the supermarket that morning.
Yeah.
That's the first day of my new life.
The first brave face of many.
The first brave face of many, yes.
Yeah. And the lads, your two sons, mm-hmm. teenagers.
They were 16 and 18 at the time, yeah.
Right. And when Colm had his cardiac arrest, they had to administer CPR.
They did, very bravely. And quite for about 18 minutes while we waited for the ambulance and the medics. And they were fantastic. And but we were just, you know, all in shock at the time and totally devastated later.
Tell us a bit about Colm.
Well, I suppose the one thing you'd know was if Colm was in a room, you'd hear him before you'd see him. He had a great passion for life. He had a great many different passions, like, you know, Gaelic football, art, music, everything. He just was really interested in an awful lot of topics, and he was good fun. He had a great laugh, and you would hear the laugh from quite a distance. He enjoyed hanging out with his family, his friends, and big Dubs fan, so went to all the matches, brought the boys over the years. And
how long were you together?
We were together 24 years.
Right. And what age was he when he died?
He was 51.
Right. Very young.
Very young.
And any hint that he had a problem with his heart?
No, none at all. Just even that day, it had started as a very ordinary day, except that one of his meetings was cancelled, so he was at home for a bit, and which is a bit unusual. But very ordinary day. We met up in the evening when he came home from work, and he seemed fine. He didn't say anything. And later, just after dinner, he just said he didn't feel well. There was no sort of drama about like what you see on TV. He just said, no, I just feel a bit sick. I felt a bit sick after my lunch. And I suppose we thought it was just like a stomach bug or something. And he just said he was incredibly tired. That was just seemed to be it, just really, really tired, and that he wanted to go to sleep. But I just had a just felt something, and I said, I think you should just stay downstairs. I don't want you to go upstairs. I want to be here beside you. So I said, just have a nap and we'll see how you are in half an hour. And if we need to go somewhere, you don't look great. So just maybe have a nap. And I'd say 25 minutes later, he never really woke up. He just let out a sound, as I call it, because I can't really describe the sound that came out of him. which just, you know, I can still hear it. And I suppose instantly I knew there was something wrong. And one of my sons came into the room, and it was just shocking, quite shocking. So then
it's a very physical thing, CPR, isn't it?
It is, yes, it's incredibly physical. I, you know, was listening to the person on the emergency line, and I did do the very first bit, but I suppose the shocking part is that when you do the first part of it, that the last breath kind of comes out of a person, the bit that's in their lungs. So that sort of gave me a bit of a shock. And my 16-year-old kind of said, well, we just did this in TY, so I'll do it. So he started, but it's very physical. And, you know, he was young, so my other son said he would take over then.
Yeah.
And they stayed doing that while we waited for the emergency services.
So we're coming up on the third anniversary.
Yep, in just a few weeks now, yeah.
Right, so it happened just before Christmas?
Yeah, just a few weeks before Christmas.
Right. So, well, there's never a good time. But
there's never a good time,
no. So as you said there at the very start, that not something you'd planned for. So, you know, when you set off on, you know, the journey of a marriage and having children, all that sort of thing, you know, the thing is, in sickness and in health, and that you know, set off into the sunset holding hands as OAPs walking around the park. That's what we all dream of, isn't it?
Yeah, it's what, well, even unconsciously, we're striving towards, raising our children, seeing them going off into the world and then spending your older age together. And suddenly you wake up and that's not your future anymore. And you're sort of left in this limbo, I suppose, wondering, well, you know, where do you start again, or how do you start again? How do you make sense of your new life? And, you know, do you leave your old life behind? What do you do?
Yeah.
And there's nobody to answer those questions for you.
And have you come up with any answers?
Absolutely none.
None? No.
None. I think even at this stage, coming up to 3 years, you're really just taking it day by day.
Hmm.
And I think when you have children, your immediate thing is to protect them and to look after them, and you put them first. And just talking from people who have friends or family who are in a similar position, they would say that they're friends as well. It's all about protecting the children.
Okay.
And you tend to put your own feelings aside, which isn't necessarily a good thing.
No.
Because you bury them quite deeply, and you put on your brave face every day, and you continue on as normally as possible, because you want your children to have as normal a life as they can have in the new situation. You don't want to burden them then with your thoughts and feelings. So you continue on, but eventually it catches up with you and you can't keep running away from the grief.
Yeah.
So
what do you do then?
Well, I did have a look around on the internet to see where there are support groups for bereaved widows and widowers or surviving partners. And I really couldn't find anything. I didn't have any immediate family or friends who were in a similar position. I knew of people, but they're not the type of people you can't just, you know, make contact with someone. Yes, knock on the door. I know. It's not the kind of thing that's easily said either. So I actually went to see a psychotherapist to help me make sense of it, or to just even to start the grieving process, because you literally leave that one to one side while you're getting on with just staying alive, you know, being there for the kids. So I would definitely encourage that, because...
And what did you get from therapy?
Well, I still go. I get someone who can just listen, who isn't emotionally involved, isn't a friend or a relative of me or of Colm. So they can see it from the outside, and they can see how you're dealing with it or what you're avoiding. Because a lot of the time you're avoiding certain things that might trigger a response.
Like in your piece, it was the purple snack.
I know, something so ordinary.
Yeah.
Because,
but that's it, isn't it? A song or a snack.
Anything, and you can be anywhere at the time. It's not always about the big events like the anniversaries and birthdays, because you prepare for them. You kind of psych yourself up and say, okay, I know that's coming. People will be texting and so on, but I'm fine. I can do this.
Hmm.
But like just walking around the supermarket, it's a very ordinary job to do. And just the purple snacks just kind of stood out to me, because I kind of felt I bought them every week just for Colm. And I didn't really need to buy them anymore. And I was going to have to pass this aisle every week now and trying not to look at it. I know it sounds kind of very simple, but it's the simple things, even just clearing out during lockdown. And I found bookmarks in books that he hadn't finished reading. And, you know, little things in the garden. He was the one who would have done the pots and all the plants. The fork was still sitting there. And I said, the last hand that touched that was his. So it's everyday little things and photographs falling out of shelves. We have a new dog and he's pulling everything out. So they're just little snippets or even just finding stuff addressed to him.
And
still.
Is the dog a part of maybe trying to create a new life?
Well, no. My therapist had been recommending the dog for quite a while. I was resisting. And eventually with lockdown and everything, I just thought, right, now it's a good time to go for it. The lads are still at home. They're meant to be in college, of course, but they're at home all the time. So I thought it'd be... It actually is working out great. It is a new bond between us. We went from a family of four to three, so we lost a quarter of the family. Then, you know, you spend the time trying to knit back together in a new way. So now we were three. Okay, so the dog isn't a substitute, but he's certainly keeping us busy and he's great fun. And it's a new focal point for us. We find ourselves sharing stories about what did the dog do today.
And how are the lads?
The lads are doing well. They're both in third level now and they're great. I can, you know, they're reminders in one way, but they're nice reminders because I can see bits of Colm in them, especially as they're getting older. And, you know, their attitude to life had, I suppose they'd had enough exposure to Colm over the years to know his opinion on a lot of things. I'm lucky in that regard that they were old enough.
So daddy would love that or daddy would hate
yes,
that.
Yes, there's a lot of that. And even around naming the dog, we were trying to think of some link with Colm and we called the dog Watson after Dr. Watson and the Sherlock Holmes. He was a very big fan of those and we used to watch the movies together with the lads when they were younger.
And what about friends? Because like couples oftentimes travel as a unit and they're invited to things as a unit.
Absolutely.
And when that unit doesn't exist anymore, what happens?
Well, you know, when I was thinking about it, you lose your partner, you lose the parent of your children, you lose a friend, but you lose a lot of your social life.
Yeah.
And it might not seem the most important thing at the beginning because you're not going anywhere. But after a while, you begin to think, well, what do I do now? The invitations sort of dry up because it used to be a couples, you know, couples would meet up here and there. We had our own separate friends. Thankfully, you know, I was able to go to my friends to the cinema or for coffees or walks. He might meet his friends for a pint. But at the weekends, generally, most people go out with their partner.
Yes.
And you might meet other couples. So you'd go out for meals or drinks or whatever. That stops. So suddenly your social circle and your life just become a lot smaller and narrower. And you're also afraid to go out and socialise because you're, you know, while you're not fully conscious of what other people are saying, but people do kind of say things that are a little insensitive at times and they may not mean to, but like, you're back out and about.
All right.
And, you know, it's just, then you begin to wonder, oh, maybe I'm not supposed to be back out or... you know,
I suppose people don't know what to say.
People don't know what to say, which is fine. And I understand that.
And, you know, people avoid awkward situations. Mm. So do you find that people avoid you?
Yes, at the beginning. But even in terms of the supermarket story that I didn't want to meet anybody in the supermarket either. I didn't want to make eye contact because at the very beginning, you might meet someone in the supermarket that you only meet every few months, you know, parents of the boys when they were little or something like that. And they may not have heard.
Right.
And I was terrified that I'd run into somebody who might say, how are things? And you stand there for a second going, well, do they know or don't they know?
Yes.
Do I actually have to say this out loud? Because you can't say the sentence for a while.
Yeah.
And you just certainly don't want to do it in the supermarket.
Oh.
And you don't want to shock the other person either. So people do avoid you, but I was also, I suppose, avoiding
people.
Other people.
Yeah. So you're in your 40s still.
Ish.
Ish, right, okay. Just out of your 40s then. Mm. Yeah. You're still a very young woman. And like, I don't know how to broach the question. You've thought about it and you've probably discussed it in therapy about, you know, finding companionship or another partner, or is that, does that enter your head at all?
People have different opinions on this. Some people, you know, after a year are kind of saying to you, you know, you need to get back out there and there's bound to be somebody else that you could meet and all of that. Other people are horrified at the mere mention that you would, as they would see it, try and replace your partner. But it's not really any of those. I think you don't make a conscious decision, or certainly I wouldn't be. It's more about, it is the companionship that you miss. It's the evenings. I mean, people talk about, you know, going out to work or whatever, or staying at home as it is at the moment. It's this other adult that you don't have that you can just chat to. You know, if you go home from work, you usually kind of say, how was your day? How was your day? If you're both working from home at the moment, maybe you might meet up for a coffee and say, oh, gosh, you know, it's very busy today or whatever. Suddenly, you're used to doing that. You waited for the key in the door. The person comes home and you have the usual, how was your day and all of that. Now you don't. Now it's just like you're parenting the whole time, and there isn't this together time with another adult. In order to do that, you have to go out to meet someone or you have to phone someone. But that's more of an arranged thing. It's just nice having the companion there who knows, you know, you had a tough day, I'll make a coffee or whatever. So you don't have that. Most people don't really broach the whole thing about, you know, I suppose not looking for somebody else, but, you know, if it was to come up, but it's not really discussed a whole lot.
Right. But do you think about it?
I don't know. I think I'm just so busy at the moment, which is great because it, you know, keeps your mind off things. And I'm still busy with the lads because they're, you know, teaching them to drive and, you know, you're just full on. You're the only person that can do everything for them. So you're kind of nearly doubling up on your workload with that as well. And then I'm at work.
So too busy, during the day.
Too busy to think about that. Yeah.
Okay. Aina says, I read that story but didn't get it at the time, but listening today when she mentioned the chocolate biscuits being Colm's favourite, I knew then that something serious happened to Colm. So there you go. Just listened to Alina on her first big return to normal shopping after bereavement. I could have written the same story. It had brought back the tears and palpitations. I was fortunate enough to meet a work colleague and we sat and talked over a coffee. I never told her what I was experiencing, as she had other things she needed sharing, but she helped me through the moment. I only told her years later, after she lost her own parent, and thanked her for being there at my moment of horror. I've never shared this with any of my family, as I felt it would only upset them. I've only been back to that shopping centre once since the experience, says Mary. So there you go. So you're saying there's no support group?
Yes. Well, in my experience, anyway, right, I did have a look online and so on. And I've spoken to a few people who have friends and family in the same position as myself. And they also cannot seem to find somewhere to go. And even when I was speaking to someone this morning, you know, she was kind of saying nobody can really understand unless they've been through it. And even when the people that have been through it, they'll have had a different experience, whether it's a sudden death or following an illness or various things. But you will all share sort of common features. And it would be great to be able to speak to other people about it, especially when you have children, because, you know, my way of dealing with it was to just focus on the children for the first year. Other people might have different ideas, and there is no right or wrong, of course, but it would be nice to kind of share with other people their experiences. And I suppose I feel now, after nearly 3 years, that maybe something I would say could be of benefit to somebody else if they were saying, well, what did you do in this situation?
Yeah.
So I was interested in just seeing, is there some way?
Well, you've said it now, and people know how to contact us, and we can pass on their details to you, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And somebody says there, I found passing the clothes shop where I bought all my husband's clothes that I would get a lump in my throat. It was very difficult, says that person. Alina, thanks so much. Firstly, for writing the piece for A Page in My Life, and secondly, for coming in and sharing your story with us today. And mind yourself and the lads.
I will. Thank
mainly
you
yourself.
Much.
Mainly yourself. Thanks, Alina.
All right, thanks.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, or ray@rte.ie. Connor Pope is on the line. How are you doing, Connor?
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Now, we don't have a lot of time, but we decided we'd put a call into you today because you're a big fan of Dublin Zoo, so much so that you got married there.
I did. And it was great, I have to say.
When, a couple of years ago, was it?
A couple of years ago, I think February the 1st, 2 years ago, or right. Maybe 2 years next February. And I have to say, it was just amazing because for a start, the weather was horrendous the day before and the day after. But on the day in question, it was bitterly cold, but the skies were really blue. And they arranged the weddings in this place called Houghton House, which is this old colonial building near the family farm there in the zoo. And it's really beautifully done up. And then after the whole wedding, they took myself, my wife and my kids and my brother and the bridesmaid down to the elephant enclosure for a picture, and I was like, I'm wearing a suit, I'm not getting into the elephant enclosure, it's mucky. But it turns out they don't do that. So they stand you in front of the elephant enclosure, right. And then they call the elephants. Right. So the elephants all stand in the background, they take the picture, and I swear to God, when I'm 95 and a little bit maybe forgetful, I start to imagine that, did I get married in Africa? Because it was just such a perfect day. But anyway, so I've also like the zoo is in my back garden effectively, because I live maybe 500 metres from the front gate of the zoo, so I live really, really close to it. And I have been an annual member for donkey's years. So like a lot of the time I go to the zoo and we just go up for an hour and a half or whatever it might be, and you see all these parents and I have such sympathy for them because they've driven up from the country or they've come from and they have to have the whole day in the zoo, so they're extracting the most out of them. The children are tired and ratty and crying, and I'm like, oh, we just popped in for a minute, we'll have a look at the penguins and then we'll go. But the bottom line is that the zoo is in trouble. It spends an awful lot of its time looking after endangered animals.
Will you just clarify something for me? So they don't get any money from the government?
No. They're a non-profit, entirely self-funded organisation. Right. They haven't got any state support for around 15 years. Now, they did get money back in 15 years ago from Bertie Ahern, and then they were also given money by the president, I think it was Mary Robinson at the time, to create the African Plains. But it's entirely self-funded. And for the last... Since March, they've had to close the doors except for maybe a couple of months during the summertime. So they're down around €8.5 million. They reckon it costs €500,000 a month just to feed and care for the animals. Nothing else, just to feed and care for the animals. And they need that money. And they've said that if they can't raise any extra money, they might have to close the doors. Now, it's been there since 1830. Like, it's an institution in the country, never mind the city.
Connor, since the new director was on this morning on Morning Ireland, Taoiseach Micheál Martin has said that the government would intervene and provide support if needs be.
That's right. Well, that's the plan. But I think what's even more uplifting maybe in a tough time is that since they announced their Save Dublin Zoo campaign, the fundraising campaign, where they're asking the general public to adopt an animal or whatever it might be, they've already raised €500,000 from the general public, just people who just want to support the zoo in its time of need. And now, €500,000, like it'll keep the zoo open for another month, but we're only 5 hours into the campaign, and I think they should be very optimistic, and I also think they should be very heartened, because this is a sign that people really do love Dublin Zoo.
I just looked up the figures there from 2018, 1.234 million people went through the gates of Dublin Zoo, so it's a huge part of people's lives. And I remember somebody from the zoo telling me, when you go as a child, you go when you're courting, and then you bring your own kids there. And then if you're looking, you can bring your grandchildren there. So it's www.dublinzoo.ie, or you can get married there if you're Conor Pope.
Indeed.
Yes. So you can adopt an animal, you can do a fundraiser, or you can donate. So there,
that's it.
Dublinzoo.ie. Thanks, Conor. We'll talk to you on Monday.
No worries. Take care.
See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Apologies for our lateness. An ishtosh and I'm the free skeleton and Oakdale. Kieran O'Farta. Kuramago, Kieran. Thank you very much. There's a good few stories coming in on the back of our chat with Helena. We may not get them to them today, but we'll definitely get to them tomorrow. Because I have to get this thing out. There you go, yep. It's our quiz of today. Today being the 18th of November, we have 10 questions on things that happened on this day. We have a great prize as well. Two nights stay at Ballinahinch Castle Hotel, surrounded by 700 acres of pristine wooded grounds and one of Connemara's oldest landscape gardens. More details at ballinahinchcastle.com. John Coyle, hello John.
Hello, how are you, Raymond?
I'm good, you're coming in loudly and clearly.
Thank you very much, and how is your day?
Well, it's good actually, it's good. And yours?
Well, I'll tell you now, it's not great because my partner now, she's over in the hospital, you know, she had breast cancer and all that stuff, you know.
Did you just get a diagnosis recently, John?
No, she had the operation, going over for a recheck, you know.
Right, okay. Well, let's hope it's good news. Let's hope it's good news.
Hopefully as well, because I had a bit of a melanoma taken off my head as well, you know.
Jeez, you've had a bad time of it.
Oh, Mayor, don't talk to me about it.
You're making Jerusalem penicillin.
That's Mayor, what you're... And I'll tell you, you know what that is?
No.
It's homemade chicken soup.
Aha.
And I'll tell you now, it's absolutely gorgeous, you know.
Have you got your radio on there, John? Will you turn it down in the background?
No, I have my radio turned down. You know what I'm watching now at the moment? I'm watching the snooker.
Aha.
You know.
Where are you originally from?
I'm originally from the best county in Ulster.
Right, in your opinion.
No, in my opinion is right. I'm from Donegal, but I've been living and working in Dublin for the last 30 years.
Aha, uh-huh. Right. How are you on the quizzes?
Well, Mayor, sure, I'd give it a lash anyway.
Good.
Know?
Well, you're up against Mary O'Leary. How are you doing, Mary?
Great.
Good. You're at home.
Where's Mary from?
I was just going to tell you where Mary is from, John.
I'm from County Leash.
There you go. The Leash-Kilkenny border. Where
exactly.
Where exactly, Mary?
In Duro.
Say again?
In Duro.
Oh, Duro. Yes, Duro. Sorry, in Duro. And you're doing a bit of cooking as well?
Well, I'm just doing the dinner.
Right, yeah.
Something easy.
That's right. That involves cooking usually, Mary.
Yeah, not yeah, that's, absolutely.
Oh, that's, oh, I see. So there's the difference between making the dinner and cooking, is there?
There is, yeah. Having to do it. That's, very much so.
So yours is functional.
Functional, absolutely, yes, yeah.
And who are you cooking it for, as well as yourself, obviously?
Well, my husband and my son.
Right.
They'll be home later.
Ah, right. And who else is in the family?
My daughter, but she lives in Loughton Bridge in Carlow.
So she can't visit, can she not?
Well, no. We haven't seen her in a while, which we're on the phone all the time.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And it's not that far away, is it? Like, what are we talking?
No, it's not. She's only about a half an hour away, you know, really.
I know. When you think of it like that, it probably doesn't make that much sense, does it?
Yes, yeah, yeah. So she'd have to come into Kilkenny, and then she'd be going into two counties, and then have to come into Leash. So,
yeah, yeah.
From Carlow.
And you know. She was meant to get married in September?
Unfortunately, she was meant to get married the 5th of September last. So that didn't work out. So it's now the 25th of September. Please, God.
2021.
2021.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope. That with the recent news of vaccines that everything will be sorted by then.
That's right. Yeah. We're delighted to hear that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, great news. So five questions each, John and Mary. I need your answers as quick as possible. Whoever answers most correctly gets
Here,
the prize.
Can I go second, can I?
No, you can't, John. You don't have a choice. You're a chancer. Did you hear that, Mary?
How does this work? I don't know. Are we asked them individually or?
Yeah, you're asked them individually. Yeah, so you are. So I start with John and then I go to you, Mary, and then back to John. Yes. Okay. Okay. Right. Let's get a bit of tension going. John. Hello, John.
I'm listening. Yes.
Yes.
I'm
here's your first question. On this day in 1846, Prince Louis of Liechtenstein, nobleman and politician, was born in Prague. In what European country is Prague?
Czechoslovakia.
I'll take that, Czech Republic, I'll take that, yeah. Okay, for you, Mary, your first question on this day in 1781. Felice Blangini, composer, was born in Turin. In what European country is Turin?
Haven't a clue, sorry.
Think about his name. Felice Blangini. What European country is Turin? I guess?
Germany.
It's Italy. Italy. Okay.
Italy.
Early days. John.
Yes, shout us Turin, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. There you go now. John, back to you. Your second question is an audio question. Have a listen to this.
Derek, you better yell! Show me the money!
Show me the money. On this day in 2006, that actor there was married to Katie Holmes at a ceremony in Italy. Can you name him?
Just hold on a second now. Can you ask the question again?
So the actor you just heard was married to Katie Holmes on this day in 2006. Can you name him?
I think it was Tom Cruise.
It was Tom Cruise. Well done. Yes, I need the answer straight away, John. Mary.
Yeah, I know, but my hearing is not very good.
Mary, your question is an audio one as well. Have a listen to this.
The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works.
Okay, and this day in the year 2000, actress Catherine Zeta-Jones married that actor.
Michael Douglas.
Is the correct answer. You're on the scoreboard. Well done, Mary.
I knew that one already.
Yeah, you did. Okay, well done, John. Well done. On this day in 1960, John, this is your question. The first Boeing jet for which airline arrived at Dublin Airport? It was called Padraig.
I think it was the 747.
No, but which airline? Which airline?
Oh, Aer Lingus.
Yes, is the correct answer. Well done.
Yeah.
And for you, Mary, on this day in 1936, the two sections of which iconic structure's main span were joined across San Francisco Bay? I'll read that again for you. On this day in 1936, the two sections of which iconic structure's main span were joined across San Francisco Bay.
I don't know. Sorry.
No idea. Golden Gate Bridge.
The Golden Gate Bridge.
There you go.
I knew that one myself.
You knew that one as well.
Sorry, Mary.
Come on, John. John,
sorry.
Your fourth question is an audio question. Have a listen to this. Now, on this day in 2017, Malcolm Young, guitarist and songwriter with that group, died at the age of 64. Can you name the group?
Who was AC/DC.
Is the correct answer. I don't think you can catch John. You can't catch John.
No.
No, you can't catch John. Nobody can catch John. Okay, so I tell you what we're going to do, Mary. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug.
Lovely. That's great. Thank you for some congratulations to John.
Yeah, and thanks so much,
Mary. And commiserations to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Good luck with the shepherd's pie and good luck with the wedding next year. And
lovely.
Happy Christmas. See you, Mary. Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Okay, John, you and your partner are off to Ballinahinch Castle in Connemara.
Yeah, and do you need an address to send it to?
We'll get it from you. We'll get it from you off air, John. Mind yourself. Good
Ray,
luck.
Thank you very much. You're a gentleman.
No, you're a gentleman too, I'm sure. Thank you very much.
And I was watching the programme there the last night.
Right.
And it was very, very good to see Dustin back on, because when I was working in the army, they used to call me Dustin.
Oh, did they? I wonder why.
Oh, Jesus, I used to get an awful slagging.
Well, I'll tell you what, John, I'll leave you on this note. Go on, you good thing.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
That was very entertaining. Great version of a great song. Dermot Kennedy with Van Morrison's Days Like This. Now, a lot of people dream about changing careers, and I suppose with the lockdown, a lot more people are thinking about it. It's a brave thing to do. My next guest is a man who swapped construction, as in building, for psychology in his 40s. Carl Blake is from County Meath. 5 years ago, he quit the building site to go back to education and is now doing a PhD in psychology. Carl features in the RTE documentary series My Uni Life, which goes out on Friday evenings on the telly, and he joins us now. How are you doing, Carl?
Hello, Ray. How the hell are you?
Good. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you too.
Yeah. Psychology in your 40s after being a builder.
Explains, as you.
Yeah, exactly. That's it, exactly. Explain.
Well, I suppose psychology is involved in everything we do, Ray. I mean, we're dealing with people. We're all dealing with people. Every one of us is dealing with people every day. So I suppose construction was no different. You were on building sites working with different people, and you have to maybe assess different moods. And, you know, I just had an interest in psychology all the time. And when the recession hit in 2008, probably was the first time I muted the idea of myself about thinking about going back to education. You know what I mean? That was maybe the the catalyst to think about it. Yeah, but I always had an interest in psychology.
So when the recession hit, of course, it devastated the construction industry.
Mm-hmm. We were working on a building site at the time down in Port Leash, and we went down one Monday morning and the gates were just closed. They were locked. There was no sign of anybody around and nobody answering phone calls. So the construction company had gone into liquidation. We didn't know that. So you were just kind of left in limbo. You know what to do.
And it wasn't something you thought about when you were leaving school back in the day?
No, when I left school, Ray, back in the day, yeah, 1990, I can't remember back that far. I left with a pretty good leaving cert now, but like, coming from a working class background, my father, Lord Emerson, was a painter and decorator. I just wanted to go to work, you know. Right. So at 17, I got a job with a small builder, which led on to working in construction sites when the boom did take off then in the mid-90s. So I never had entertained the idea of college. And I suppose maybe, again, coming from the lower socioeconomic background, you probably associated college with, you know, people who could afford to go more, maybe, you know, upper middle class and higher class people went to college. So I didn't entertain it at all, no.
Yeah. And as you say, those, like, that's from the mid-90s on there for 10 years. The construction industry was the industry to be in.
Oh, it was great. It was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I mean, you could walk out one site and go down the road and get a job on another site. It's just funny listening earlier on. When you're talking about the Lego Coliseum.
Yeah.
I remember one particular foreman we used to have on a site a few years ago. I won't mention any names. And he'd come running in. He'd come in his Jeep and he'd get out and he'd come running down the site. And he'd go, if he's not got that done yet. And we'd say, look, sure, Rome wasn't built in a day. He says, it would have been if I was there. So... You'd miss the crack and stuff, do you know what I mean? But I don't miss the manual labour now that I'm heading for the 50 mark. You're getting aches and pains where in places where you never got them before.
But it is, I suppose there is a huge contrast between, you know, being a manual labourer on a construction site to psychology and living in your head a good bit.
Absolutely unbelievable contrast. Like... the manual labour aspect, obviously, as you've outlined there, like, I mean, it's physical labour, it's hard labour, and the construction work is tough. And I was doing a lot of concrete work and stuff, so it was particularly tough work, like, you know, from 7, 8 o'clock in the morning till 5, 6 o'clock in the evening. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're not doing that anymore, and it's more academic or in your head, as you say. Yeah. Use your brain instead of your brawn, so to speak, you know. Yes.
So you were into DCU.
Yeah.
Age 42, was it?
Age 42, yeah. Thanks, Ray.
No, I'm creating a picture for people, Carl. Yeah. And there, most people who are starting university are 18, 19, 20.
Mm-hmm.
So you're twice their age, mm-hmm. at least.
Yeah.
How was that for you?
Very overwhelming. On the first day, as I speak about it in the documentary, it was very overwhelming because I had the perception that I would be the oldest person in the university, and I thought I would be surrounded by, you know, teenagers or school leavers. Luckily enough, what DCU are fantastic, what they did was they organised a mature student writing week the week before university started proper. So it gave mature students a chance to come and sort of dip their toe in, you know, getting used to the academic life and using online systems and stuff. So it was just a couple of hundred mature students, and we had the university to ourselves for that week. But then the following week, the other 13 or 14,000 students landed back on the DCU campus or on the Glasnevin campus. And I have to say, it was overwhelming.
Mm. And were you seen as an oddity? Were they pointing at you and talking about you behind your back?
Yeah, that was probably one of the reasons why I was nervous about going back. But funny enough, I think that the fact that we were sharing the same journey, so like the school leavers were coming into university for the first time as well as the mature students. Now, the year I started, there's only an intake of 40 students. There was an intake of 40 psychology students that year, so there was five mature students in the class.
And 35.
Including myself, and 35 school leavers, we'd say. So the school leavers were accepted us just as students. Mm. I suppose we're all going on the one journey, and there was no separation between the two.
Having done psychology myself at undergraduate level, it's sort of wasted on young people. So, you know, it is, I think, a degree suited to an older person.
I would probably agree with you there. Yeah. You're bringing a little bit of life experience. Yes. And when you're looking at the various theories and stuff, you can apply them to situations you've been in.
So PhD, what's your area of expertise?
I'm looking into young onset dementia, Ray, because I believe it's an area that's very, very under researched at the moment in Ireland. And of the 55,000 or 60,000 people diagnosed with dementia every year in Ireland, unfortunately, there's at least 10% of that cohort who have young onset dementia.
What's the definition of young?
It's somebody under the age of 65 years of age who gets diagnosed with dementia. But there's people like in their 30s, 40s and 50s up, because 65 is sort of an arbitrary figure, like an arbitrary cutoff point. So it brings with it a host of its own psychosocial issues, you know, you know, people have to give up.
Yeah, we've spoken to Cathy Ryan on the programme. Yeah, a good few times. Yeah. She's an amazing woman.
I've worked with Cathy on a few projects.
She's an amazing woman. So did that happen, that conference you were supposed to talk at?
The conference I was in the Netherlands last year in The Hague, and I spoke at that, and then the one this year that was supposed to go ahead in Bucharest was over Zoom. That was online.
So you're speaking to people who've worked in this area for years and years and years.
Believe it or not.
Carl Blake, the builder.
Here's me, the builder,
From Tower Cross in County Meath.
You just want to know how to do foundations and stuff. But it is. That can be quite overwhelming as well. Yeah. You know, as you say, you're going to be up in front of like doctors and professors who've worked in this area for, you know, their whole careers.
I want to talk to you because we're running out of time, and I want to talk to you about your partner, Linda, because she's been there for you. She's been your rock.
Linda's been amazing. She's listening at home right as we speak. Hi, Linda.
Then you became her rock because she had a stroke.
Yeah, I just listened to Helena there speaking.
Yes, I know. There's a lot of in common.
Sort of brought it back with the whole, you know, with the CPR and stuff. Yeah, Linda collapsed in 2019, last year, in July 2019, from a subarachnoid hemorrhage, so a bleed in the brain, a pretty significant bleed in the brain. And she collapsed at home and was in a coma. And myself and our two boys, Sean Paul and Jack, had to do CPR till the ambulances arrived. And then she was rushed to the Lourdes Hospital and from there to Beaumont.
And you, because you knew what happens in those situations with strokes and what happens to the brain, you were able to help her in her recovery, which is brilliant.
Exactly.
And you can see all of that in My Uni Life, Friday evenings at 7:30 on RTE1.
You can.
You're an inspiration, and I mean that, Carl, because, you know, people listening now will be going, well, if he can do it, and that's, you know.
That's what I try and tell people, Ray, and if only one person, you know, watches this documentary, hears this and realises that, you know, you can go back at any age, and if you've got a little bit of drive at all, you can
do it.
You know what I mean? You really can achieve.
Right. Been a pleasure talking to you, Carl Blake.
Thanks a million, Ray.
Mind yourself.
Okay,
see you now.
Bye.
That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.